about it. Okay, we'll call State Administration to order. If you would take the roll, Madam Secretary.
Vice Chair Vance.
Here.
Vice Chair Bennett.
I'm here.
Senator Cupp.
Here.
Senator Ellis.
Here.
Senator Fox.
Here.
Senator Osmundson.
Here.
Senator Sayles.
Here.
Chairman Carey.
Here. Okay, we'll just go right into executive action. And we'll try to work bills until 3 o'clock, and then we'll do the two Senate resolutions.
Is the House still in, do you know?
I believe it is.
Couldn't find that out. That's why.
277, Mr. Vice Chair.
Mr. Chair, I move a due pass on House Bill 277.
277, and I was introduced by Mercer, Representative Mercer, and laws related to providing a strategic planning process. I think you have a gray bill there.
Ginger, how many amendments are there for this bill?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, there are three separate amendments for this bill, but the third amendment, that's the 1.3, is the sponsor's amendment, and it incorporates the 1.2 amendment, which is Senator Kerry's, and then it also has its own coordination, which is the 1.1. So all, you should consider the 1.3 first, and you won't, if you pass that one, you don't have to worry about the other amendments.
Okay, Mr. Chair, I move a due pass on Amendment HB 277.1.3.
Okay. Ms. Aldridge, would you like to take us through the gray bill?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, certainly. So this is, as you can see, an extensive amendment, but a lot of what it is I would characterize as sort of wording updates by the sponsor, so I'm just going to mainly go through the major points of the amendment. This amendment incorporates Senator Kerry's request that performance measures include electronic monitoring tools. It also incorporates a non-substantive coordination amendment to coordinate with Senate Bill 57. Then the rest is the sponsor's updates to the bill. So the amendment strikes extraneous wording and tweaks language under the Declaration of Policy and Purpose. You can see all of those updates on pages 1, 2, and 3. It updates terminology in the definition section. It revises the strategic plan so that now it's not a long-range strategic plan that is for a set amount of 3 years. Instead, it's now just going to be called the strategic plan for an undefined amount of time. But the amendment still requires, as did the bill, that the strategic plan be updated every 3 years. It deletes multiple requirements about how to set performance measures, but it leaves intact the definition of performance measures and adds what they are intended to do in the definition section. It deletes new Section 7, which concerns the legislative use of performance data. It deletes the bill's amendments to the budget preparation process and the executive budget. So the bill had stricken requirements for an agency to provide statements of the agency's mission, goals, and objectives for each program of the agency in the budget preparation process, and to provide a departmental mission statement and a statement of goals and objectives in the executive budget. So the effect of taking those two sections out of the bill means that those requirements will now remain in law, even if the bill passes. Mr. Chair.
Discussion on the amendment. Senator Bennett.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, the sponsor and I and Senator Sayles worked on all these amendments. There was a lot of very specific structured requirements for the executive in the original bill, and the thought was that this might not get across the finish line if we put all these parameters on them. So we said, let's find a way to accomplish this important goal of strategic plans but also giving the executive some flexibility as to how exactly they implement it. So I think it's all the good things that we liked about what the bill did with some of the, you know, independence that you know, various agencies will have as to how exactly they go about doing it while we still get the same great information.
Further discussion on the amendment? Seeing none, Can we do a voice vote, or would you rather do a... Okay, all in favor of amendment... what's the number on that again?
277.1.3.
Please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
Mr. Chairman, this is very unusual. I don't get two votes today. I usually do.
You're only one. You only get your own.
Yeah, please do.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman, I move a due pass on House Bill 277 as once amended.
Discussion on the bill as amended. Senator Bennett.
Mr. Chair, I'll just say quickly that I know when I'm wearing the mask it's hard to tell, but when I saw this bill, I was grinning from ear to ear. I think this is one of the most exciting things that I've seen, and I know strategic plans aren't like everybody's exciting thing, but as somebody who comes from the nonprofit sector where strategic plans are very important and drive a lot of the work that we do, having state agencies engage in this work, set tangible goals that are measurable, that are quantifiable, so that when they get to 1 year, 3 years, 5 years, they know, did we accomplish our goal? Is there something else that we could have done to get there in the future, so that we all have a tangible sense of, are we making the progress that we thought that we were making? So I think this is just a really fantastic bill that's going to make sure that government is working at its very best for the people of Montana.
Senator Sales.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I just want to reiterate again what the senator across the table said, that the sponsor truly did do a lot of work on this, and Senator Bennett too, but definitely to streamline it, take out some words, so to speak, that were fairly heavy. But I too see, when I remember not that long ago, my first session, and trying to understand how and what we looked at as far as did it fit budget, and did those departments do what they were told? And I truly see this benefiting new incoming as well as existing legislators moving forward. So I enjoy the work and pleased that they were able to come together.
I appreciate the committee's work on this. Senator Cuff.
Question.
Question has been called. Can we do a roll call or a voice vote?
Yeah.
All in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Let it show it.
So, Mr. Chairman, are we going to have Senator Sales and Senator Bennett arm wrestle to see who gets to carry it, or?
That's an easy arm wrestle.
I would love to carry it.
Okay, Senator Bennett will carry that to the floor.
Mr. Chairman, I move a due pass on House Bill 406.
House Bill 406 is by Representative Nolan, revise absentee and mail ballot laws. We do have an amendment on that.
One, right?
Yes.
Mr. Chairman, I move a due pass on HB 406 amendment .1.2.
And Ms. Aldridge, if you'd care to take us on a trip through this one also, you do it so nicely and succinctly.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. So this amendment will strike the exceptions from the Ballot Interference Protection Act, otherwise known as BIPA, for acquaintances, caregivers, and household members. It also redefines family member as a voter's spouse, an individual related to the voter by consanguinity or adoption within the second degree, or by affinity or adoption to the spouse within the second degree, or the legal guardian for a voter. So what that essentially means is it would include parents and children, grandparents, grandchilds, a brother or a sister. And because this amendment takes out the exception for acquaintances, that new section one was specific to acquaintances, so it strikes that entire new section, which includes the ballot collection registry for acquaintances. The amendment does still leave in the registry that would apply to family members who are collecting ballots. So they would still have to fill out the registry for collecting and conveying a ballot for their family member that was under the original bill. This eliminates the effective date, which was an immediate effective date under the bill, and moves it to January 1st, 2022. Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Ms. Aldridge. Questions on the amendment? Senator Ellis.
Mr. Chairman, Ms. Aldridge, so by striking acquaintance, does that mean that only family members can bring someone else's ballot? Is that what this would do now?
Mr. Chair and Senator Ellis, that is correct.
Senator Bennett.
Mr. Chair, I'm not going to take my seatmate's suggestion on that one, but I mean, this is a train wreck of an amendment. Like, I don't want to like go into hyperbole, but like this concept was struck down by the courts because it was burdensome, and the bill itself was more burdensome than BIPA 1.0. And this amendment wants to make it so that only family members, I mean, to strike caregiver. To say that an elderly person can't have their home health care worker deliver their ballot, you can't have your roommate deliver your ballot, I mean, this is egregious. I mean, this is further than I would have ever thought this bill would go, and I mean, certainly hope that we vote down this amendment.
And because it is my amendment, the reason that it went that way is because acquaintance was not defined at all. And that's where the courts had their problems, was on the acquaintance. Any further discussion?
Question.
Question has been called. I believe we're going to have a roll call vote.
Vice Chair Vance.
Yes.
Vice Chair Bennett.
No.
Senator Cuff.
Yes.
Senator Ellis.
No.
Senator Fox.
No.
Senator Osmundson.
Yes.
Senator Sayles.
No.
Chairman Carey.
Yes.
Four vote yes and four vote no.
The amendment dies, so now we're back on House Bill 406 with no amendments.
Yes, you did.
Question.
Question has been called. Roll call vote.
Vice Chair Vance.
Yes.
Vice Chair Bennett.
No.
Senator Cuff.
Yes.
Senator Ellis.
No.
Senator Fox.
No.
Senator Osmundson.
Yes.
Senator Sayles.
Yes.
Chairman Carey.
Yes.
Five vote yes and three vote no.
One more easy one before
this. Yeah.
Because there's no amendments.
And I will carry that to the floor because I like easy
so
bills.
Mr. Chairman, I move a due pass on House Bill 429.
429 was by Representative Jones, and it revised governor's powers to suspend election laws during states.
Steve.
Discussion on the bill. Senator Bennett.
Mr. Chair, I'm going to oppose this bill. And certainly, I mean, I think that there's a number of bills this session that are aimed at the idea that we don't want executive emergency powers to go too far, and I certainly agree with that. But I think that what we saw this year was a situation where people coming together in the way they normally would, standing in those long lines, would be a real health risk. And because of that, I think the governor took reasonable precautions to make sure that we weren't spreading COVID-19. But, I mean, even beyond this, I mean, I do think that so many of these bills, unfortunately, are targeted at this specific situation that we've had in 2020 and 2021. I mean, if we find ourselves in a place where it's Ebola, or if it's something that's even worse than what we have now, saying that we can't defer from the way that we would normally do elections to keep people safe is just a very dangerous prospect. So I get where the sponsor's going with this, but I mean, it's just not forward thinking about how we might end up in an even worse situation than we have now.
Further discussion. I just have this to add. We all took an oath to uphold the Constitution, and part of the Constitution says that the state legislature is the only body that can deal with the election, setting the date and how it's going to be run. not the executive power, not the judicial power, only the state legislature, because it is for the states.
Question.
Question has been called. We'll do a roll call vote.
Vice Chair Vance.
Yes.
Vice Chair Bennett.
No.
Senator Cuff.
Yes.
Senator Ellis.
No.
Senator Fox.
No.
Senator Osmundson.
Yes.
Senator Sayles.
Yes.
Chairman Carey.
Yes.
5 vote yes and 3 vote no.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
I'd like to reconsider or have us move to reconsider the actions that we took on 406.
On the bill or on the amendment?
On the, if I can, on the amendment.
The amendment.
As Ginger, just, Mr. Chairman, do we need to reconsider actions on the passage of the bill first, or can we just go ahead and amend the bill even though it is passed, Ginger?
I think we have to consider our actions on the bill, and then when we bring we can bring the amendment back.
I think that's correct. She's trying to say.
You're muted, Ginger.
That's correct, Mr. Chair.
What's correct?
We have to reconsider actions on the bill.
Okay.
So if I could, Mr. Chair, I'd like to move then that we reconsider our actions on 406 on the bill.
Okay. Vote to reconsider our actions on the bill, on House Bill 406. We'll go roll call vote.
Vice Chair Vance.
Yes.
Vice Chair Bennett.
No.
Senator Cuff.
Yes.
Senator Ellis.
No.
Senator Fox.
No.
Senator Osmundson.
Yes.
Senator Sayles.
Yes.
Chairman Carey.
Yes.
5 vote yes and 3 vote no.
And now we reconsider on the amendment, correct?
We'd move the bill and then amend.
So you can move the bill and then move the
amendment. Voted the amendment down. That's why I'm asking. Yes. So if the amendment has been voted down, don't we have to reconsider that action as well? Yes,
Ginger, do we have to reconsider our actions on voting the amendment down, or being that we have the bill on the table right now, can we just move the amendment? You're muted.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I believe that you can probably do it either way. It's probably simplest just to move the amendment again.
All right, Mr. Chairman, I move a due pass on amendment HB 406.1.2.
Discussion on the amendment.
Question.
Question has been called. We'll do a roll call vote.
Vice Chair Vance.
Yes.
Vice Chair Bennett.
No.
Senator Cuff.
Yes.
Senator Ellis.
No.
Senator Fox.
No.
Senator Osmundson.
Yes.
Senator Sayles.
Yes.
Chairman Carey.
Yes.
5 vote yes and 3 vote no.
Mr. Chairman, I move a due pass on House Bill 406 as once amended.
Is there any discussion on the bill?
Question.
Roll call vote on House Bill 406, please.
Vice Chair Vance.
Yes.
Vice Chair Bennett.
No.
Senator Cuff.
Yes.
Senator Ellis.
No.
Senator Fox.
No.
Senator Osmundson.
Yes.
Senator Sayles.
Yes.
Chairman Carey.
Yes.
5 vote yes and 3 vote no.
Okay, members, with that, we'll pause and go into our hearings on the bills.
Do I do the resolutions first or Steve, since he's here?
We've got some people that have taken off of work, so we'll probably do the resolutions first. No. Okay. I didn't. Oh, that's down here.
I should probably wait until you're ready, right? I mean, it's a little thing of like being a sponsor, right?
You don't have to. I just came unprepared.
Ryan.
So what's the order? Is that the order?
Okay.
Okay. Members of the committee, we'll open the hearing on SR 82. Senator Kerry.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. SR 82 is the appointments to the Board of Veterans Affairs. And the Board of Veterans Affairs consists of 20 members. And all the members must be residents of the state. 11 members are voting members who must be confirmed by the Senate. And 9 members are non-voting members. The governor appoints 19 members in a manner that provides for staggered terms. There are 5 regional representatives who must be voting members and who must have been honorably discharged from service in the military. Each must be appointed to represent a different geographical region of the state and also must be a resident of that geographical region. The board shall establish the geographical regions by rule. A member who represents a geographical region and who changes residence to a different geographical region may no longer serve on the board unless appointed as a representative for the new location. Members of the body, Senate Resolution 82 is the governor appoints Clayton Carroll of Sidney, Montana to a term ending July 31st, 2024. Brett Cusker of Bozeman for a term ending July 31st, 2022. Ryan Lukow of Helena for a term ending July 31st, 2023. Barb Skelton out of Billings, Montana for a term ending July 31st, 2023. And Dean Rabine out of Missoula for a term ending July 31st of 2022. Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Senator. At this time, we'll hear from proponents to SR 82.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. For the record, Leanne Taylor, T-A-Y-L-O-R, on behalf of Governor Gianforte. Mr. Chair did a great job on the board. I'll just go a little bit deeper on that. So the makeup for the rest of the board is one honorably discharged veteran who serves as a representative of veterans at large. You had confirmed Thank Jen you. Dalrymple earlier in the session. One tribal member, I believe, who will be here on Senate Resolution 85. And then 3 members who must have training, education, or experience related to to veterans issues. So just to clarify, Clayton Carroll, who I believe is on Zoom, is the representative for Region 5. Brett Cusker is the representative for Region 2. Ryan Lukow has the experience or training in veterans issues. Barb Skelton also has experience training in veterans issues. And Dean Rabine, experience in veterans issues. And with that, we would just request that you confirm the members and appreciate your time. Thank you.
Thank you. Are there further proponents in the room to SR 82?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. For the record, Roger Hagan, last name spelled H-A-G-A-N, representing the Montana Department of the American Legion and our more than 13,000 Legion family members, and the Montana National Guard Officer and Enlisted Associations. We rise in support of Senate Resolution 82. As you heard from me before, I served on the governor's transition team for the Department of Military Affairs, and a lot of these appointments were definitely our first choice. And so we think that this whole slate will be very good for our veterans, and we encourage your support.
Thank you. Further proponents in the room to SR 82? Seeing none, does anyone know if there are any in the hallway? Okay. Are there any proponents on Zoom, Alex? Senate Resolution 82.
No, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. Sorry, I've been told there are, so.
He's there.
I have a couple of them listed for Senate Resolution 85, but not for 82. Would that be what we've done here?
That would be correct, Mr. Chair.
Clayton Carroll?
Clayton Carroll, yeah.
Are you there?
Yes, Mr. Chair.
Okay, whenever you're ready.
Yes, sir. Name's Clayton Carroll. Last name C-A-R-R-O-L-L. I am a proponent for it.
Still there? Okay.
Still here, sir.
Thank you. Is Ms. Skelton on?
Yes, I am. Thank you. Mr. Vice Chair and members of the committee, this is Barb Skelton, Billings, Montana. Thank you.
Thank you. Are there any opponents on Zoom? Well, that name I don't have on here. Who are we talking about? What's the name? I don't have it.
Brett Custer. He's from Bozeman.
Mr. Custer, are you on there?
Yeah, Mr. Chair, yes, I am here.
Okay.
This is Brett Custer, C-U-S-K-E-R, from Bozeman. I'm a proponent as well. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Now, are there any opponents? I don't have any listed, so I'm going to assume there are not. Are there any in the hallway, Roger? Okay. Any informational witnesses? Okay, we'll go to questions from the committee. Senator Ellis.
Mr. Chairman and proponents, candidates, I just wondered if you could take a few minutes to tell us why you are interested in serving on this board. Starting with Mr. I'm trying to, I should have my glasses on. I'm sorry, I don't. Mr. Clayton Carroll, if you could spend a couple minutes, just tell us.
Yes, Mr. Chair and Senator. I've been a member of the United States military almost 12 years, Air Force and Army. I was an officer, warrant officer when I left. I flew Apache helicopters. The Army traveled all over the world. My purpose, I was taught very early on, take care of our people. It was drilled into me very, very much so. And that was my goal. When I left, I was the executive officer at Butts Army Airfield at Fort Carson in Colorado Springs. And I was in charge of 120 soldiers there. It was really brought home to me on the help I could give and the things I could do to take care of my fellow soldiers. So for me, and this opportunity presented itself, I kind of jumped at it because I still believe to this day, with everything that's happened in the past couple years, that our soldiers, airmen, seamen, Marines, they all need help. And I feel I've got a lot to give back to my community, and I'd definitely like to be able to do that here in Montana.
Thank you, Mr. Carroll. We'll go to Mr. Custer now.
Good afternoon, everybody. Again, I definitely appreciate the opportunity to speak here to this group. I am a Montana kid, served in the Air Force for 25 years. I have a family history of service, both in Montana National Guard as well as active duty. Son is currently serving in the Montana Army National Guard. I think that this is a fantastic opportunity to give back and to continue to serve after my retirement. Can't hardly believe it. In 2016, it's been 5 years. I'm ready to get back into a service role for the state of Montana. Special emphasis on mental health of our veterans. As you all know, this is a big issue in our society in general, but especially acute for our veteran population. You know, there's lots of reasons for it. Frankly, there's no pre-evaluation for mental health before we bring people in. There is no culture in the military of acceptance of mental problems or needs of help while on active duty or in the National Guard service. This is leading to long-term needs that, and I believe that any effort is an effort and a step in the right direction, but definitely an area of emphasis. An interest to me, and that's why I'd like to be a part of this board and be a voice.
Thank you, Mr. Custer. Now we'll go to Ms. Skelton.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. I'm honored and humbled to be asked to do this. In 1978, you could tell I'm old, the hair is gray. I became a member of the American Legion Auxiliary. My husband at that time, Bill Skelton's father, was a World War two veteran, and Bill was a veteran of the Army in the Korean War era. I then was a member of the Volunteers of America, and we serve veterans' issues. And one thing we did here in Billings was build the homeless shelter for veterans. We have 19 beds there for homeless veterans. And in 6 years ago, my husband and I started a nonprofit for veterans' issues. It's called Horses Spirits Healing, Inc. It's equine therapy for veterans and their families, because the sacrifices that have been made not only affect our veterans, men and women coming home, but also their families, their children, their loved ones, and their wives. And so I've always believed that we as people here at home owe a great debt of gratitude to those that have kept us free and healthy here, and have served and sacrificed so much. So that's why I'm interested in this committee. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Skelton. Are there further questions from the committee? Seeing none, sponsor care to close.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just to note that Ryan Lukow was hindered in coming up today. He was he's working down at Townsend, and he could not get off.
Pardon? He's here?
Sorry. I apologize.
Are you Ryan?
Dean Rabine.
Dean Rabine, okay. Mr. Rabine just came in, so would you like to hear from
him? For 82?
For 82,
okay.
Yes.
Normally we don't, but we'll make an exception this time, sir. Come to the microphone, please.
Okay.
Good for
you. Can come over here.
Thank you.
But it would just be good to know a little bit about yourself and why you
are. My name's Dean Rabine. Born Minnesota, moved to Montana. You want the whole life all the way through? Might as well delegate the military part out. I was in the back seat in 74, moved to Montana. I enlisted in the Navy on my 18th birthday. Went to A school, stationed on the USS Midway, which in San Diego is now a museum. While I was enlisted, I applied for a program called BOOST, Broadened Opportunity for Officer Selection and Training, and went to San Diego for 13 months, sorry. And it was basically into the Navy's prep school for the Academy and our ROTC scholarships. Went to the University of Idaho, degree in mining engineering, selected for the Navy flight program, became a helicopter pilot, Gulf War, flight instructor. My last tour in the Navy was administrative officer, ADAC Alaska. The reason I thought or wanted to be on the committee was to try to help people out there. You drive down the street, it just doesn't seem like there isn't a corner that says homeless vet, throw some, moves his hand out. It just doesn't make sense to me. So there's got to be a way to, or an avenue to get the people off the street into at least, if nothing else, into shelter, and then from there some type of program to where they can have, maybe they have a meaningful life as they are, I don't know, but maybe just try to improve their life.
Senator Ellis, did that answer your question again? Okay. You bet.
And Mr. Chairman, I just wanted to say thank you to the candidates for showing up today.
Yes.
That's really, really helpful and important for us.
Senator Ellis is right. We've been doing a lot of these over the last 4 months, and very rarely do as many of them show up as what you folks did today, so thank you.
Yeah,
Senator Kerry, would you care to close on the resolution?
Apologize for being late.
Thank you, Mr. Rabine. Members of the committee, I ask for a due pass for accepting these veterans to appointments on the Veterans Affair. Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Senator Kerry. That closes the hearing on Senate Resolution 82. We'll now open the hearing on Senate Resolution 85. Senator Kerry.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senate Resolution 85 is, again, an appointment to the Board of Veterans Affairs. Now, 85 is the one that is a tribal member who must have an honorable discharge, be an honorable discharge veteran, and who is a voting member. And the nominee is Ryan Baston from Poplar. Mr. Chair.
Thank you. At this time, we'll hear from proponents. Are there any proponents to SR 85?
Good afternoon again, Mr. Vice Chair, members of the committee. For the record, Leanne Taylor, T-A-Y-L-O-R, on behalf of Governor Gianforte. And just one quick note with Mr. Baston. He had actually been an interim appointee from the former Governor Bullock. That was a very long list of interim appointees. He inadvertently got left off. So that's also why there's two separate Senate resolutions. But we would ask for your support on this resolution. Thank you.
Thank you for that clarification. Are there further proponents?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. For the record, Roger Hagan, last name spelled H-A-G-A-N, representing the Montana Department of the American Legion and a Montana National Guard officer and enlisted associations. And we stand in support of Senate Resolution 85, as we have in the previous one. We think it's a very important thing to have very valuable and very knowledgeable people on this Veterans Board, because they are the Montana Veterans Affairs Division, and we certainly support this appointment with Mr. Rabine. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Hagan. Are there further proponents in the room? Do you know if there's any proponents in the hallway, Roger? Okay. I don't see any proponents on Zoom. Is that correct?
That is my understanding, Mr.
Okay.
Chair.
Thank you. Are there any opponents in the hallway, Roger? No. Okay. We'll go to questions from the committee. Right. Okay, there's no questions from the committee, so the sponsor care to close.
Thank you, committee members. Mr. Chair, I ask for your approval on Senate Resolution 85 for the appointment. Mr. Chair.
Thank you. That closes the hearing on Senate Resolution 85, members. What's the order here? Do you care?
84 and then 85.
Okay. Yeah. Members, we're going to now open the hearing on House Bill 384. Representative Gunderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, Representative Steve Gunderson. G-U-N-D-E-R-S-O-N, House District 1. And what I bring today is HB 384, and it's changing Article 3, Section 4 of the Montana Constitution to increase the number of qualified electors required to sign an initiative petition for a statutory amendment. If you have the bill in front of you, the changes are page 1, line 15, from 5 to 10% of the qualified electors, in at least from 1/3 to 3/5 of the legislative representative districts. And the total number of signers on line 16 goes from 5 to 10%. Basically, we're raising the bar on the signatures required to put a statutory amendment on the ballot. And I might just give you a little history. 2001, this body changed Article 3, Section 4, and rather than the 3/5 of the legislative representative districts, they changed it to counties. And it was actually, in my assumption, and I think Senator Bennett would agree with me, that that was the wrong way to do it. And MPIRG actually challenged it, and it was judge overturned it and said, yes, you're right. But they never changed the language. In 2019, I brought two amendments, basically the same amendment, just cleaning up that language. So today I bring back the bill so I don't have to tell a real long, drawn-out story to get where we're at. So basically, all we're doing is raising the bar. Mr. Chair.
Thank you. At this time, we'll hear from proponents to House Bill 384. Are there any proponents in the room? Do you know if there are any proponents in the hallway by chance? No? Okay. Are there any proponents on Zoom to House Bill 384?
No, Mr. Chair.
Okay. At this time, we'll hear from opponents in the room to House Bill 384. Are there any opponents?
Good afternoon, Chair and members of the committee. My name is Adrian Jowart. That's J-A-W-O-R-T. And I represent Montana Native Vote. This bill makes it nearly impossible for any initiative to go through signature, and it's such very undemocratic. What it does is create a bureaucratic mess on, like, all ends, as opposed to, look, we have support. Let's put it to a vote. I mean, going from 40 to 60 legislative districts with an outrageous double jump of 10 to 20%, which was already very difficult to attain and took a very concerted effort, is draconian. I mean, what's the end game here? I mean, I read somewhere it was like regarding I-186, so now we have to throw the baby out with the bathwater. I mean, it doesn't really expand democratic involvement because Montana is not Rhode Island. It is so vast, you need an incredible operation to even get something close to set up with that many bases beyond all the already said difficult process. The only numbers we should be considering are the date 11-3-20, when Montana C-46 was voted in favor of 76.87% versus 23.13%. C-46 amends constitutional language to match the existing signature requirements for initiated constitutional amendments, or we can ignore and circumvent the will of 76.80% of people. What it does is throw the whole process back into the hands of a small minority of hyper-partisan legislators instead of power to the people who already resoundingly disagreed with them on this matter. That being said, this would likely have the same result of being voted against, and the irony is if you try to get signatures using this rule, it would never happen. Ergo, this bill is unnecessary as it has already been decided against resoundingly. Thank you.
Thank you. Further opponents?
Good afternoon, lady and gentlemen. My name is Stan Fraser. That's F-R-A-S-I-E-R. I live here in Helena. I've been coming up here to the legislature for 30-some years annoying people. And in all that time, I've noticed over and over again, Republicans are always trying to make it harder for citizens to participate in government. When we passed the Game Farm Initiative roughly 20 years ago, they set their hair on fire over that, and the first thing they tried to do was overturn that initiative. They were not successful in doing that. And then, at that time, they increased the signature gathering requirements for initiatives. So this has already been done once. Apparently it wasn't successful because we've passed a couple other citizen initiatives on marijuana. And in my memory, nearly every citizen's initiative that's been passed has been attempted to be overturned by the legislature. Excuse me. When I say that, I mean the Republicans in the legislature. Initiatives are a lot of work. I've been involved in several, and it's hard work to go out and collect all the signatures and get these things on the ballot, meet all the legal requirements of the Secretary of State and the Attorney General's office to get them qualified. It takes a tremendous amount of work. And it kind of burns my beans that the legislature keeps saying, oh, it's too easy to do. it's easy for you guys to do this method, don't have to go out and collect signatures, get them on the ballot, but the rest of the citizens do. And if this passes, what will happen is this will make initiatives nearly impossible for citizens to get done. And what you will have is only big business and corporations who have a lot of money to spend and can hire signature collectors. Those will be the only people getting initiatives on the ballot. When we passed the first marijuana initiative, what was it, 14, 15, 16 years ago, first thing legislature said, oh, they didn't know what they were doing. We have to fix it. They didn't change it at that time, but they eventually amended that bill to make it unworkable. Now the Republicans are hard at work trying to gum up this current marijuana initiative. And we always hear this argument, well, the legislature has more time to study these things and get a better result. That'd be nice if it actually worked that way, but it doesn't work that way. And we always hear this argument, well, the poor rural voters are overrun by the people in the cities. Well, you go to places to collect signatures where people are, because it's difficult to do. And I don't see any reason why rural voters should count more, their vote should count more than urban voters. Everybody gets a vote when it comes to the ballot box. And it just appears to me that Republicans don't like democracy.
Further opponents.
Hello, my name is Patrick Yawaki. That's spelled Y-A-W-A-K-I-E. I'm representing the Blackfeet tribe today. You know, this is just, again, another attack on democracy. We come from small rural Montana, and we try to fight for every single vote. Because a lot of the urban Montana, or rural Montana faces voter apathy, not considering themselves a part of the whole. So this is just, again, further distancing those voters with apathy from the democratic process. And last time I checked, this is a democracy. So again, we stand opposed to this. Please do not vote in support of this.
Thank you. Further opponents.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. For the record, Katjana Stutzer, K-A-T-J-A-N-A-S-T-U-T-Z-E-R, here on behalf of the Montana Public Interest Research Group, or MONTPERG. And we rise in opposition to House Bill 384. This isn't just a small change to our ballot initiative process. This is a significant increase to the number of legislative districts where signatures would have to be gathered from, and doubles the overall signature requirement. This creates a really onerous standard that would make ballot initiatives like this near impossible. They're already very difficult, and I don't think that we're seeing a compelling reason to raise this bar. Montana consistently has far more statutory initiatives filed than actually make it to the ballot. It's not like everybody that wants to bring something to the ballot is getting there, and we're having 10 plus double digit numbers of ballot initiatives that are cluttering up the ballot. I think that we have a good process already here in Montana that's keeping that number relatively low, which means that it's working. And overall, these initiatives increase direct citizen engagement with government. You all know you represent many, many constituents and can't possibly reflect the exact interests of every single one of those constituents. That's why this tool exists for everyday Montanans to organize with other everyday Montanans and bring issues that are important to them to the ballot, which increases direct engagement with the government and reflects the will of voters in a direct way, as it should. We think this is an important system that we should protect. And since House Bill 384 would essentially end the ability to bring these initiatives to the ballot, we're in opposition.
Thank you. Further opponents in the room? Are there further opponents?
Chairman Carey and members of the
Pull the microphone over so that it, there we go.
Chairman Carey and members of the board. I guess this isn't a board, this is a committee, right? Okay, I'll get you. My name is Carol Mackin, and my last name is spelled M-A-C-K-I-N. Okay. since 1906, so I'm going to go way back, initiatives have shaped Montana's government. Voters quickly became good at passing a petition, even though it took signatures from 8% of the voters, and they had to qualify 40 legislative districts. So it's a little harder then. In 1972, the Constitutional Convention, the CONCON, made it easier to qualify initiatives. The statutory initiatives needed signatures from 5% and had to qualify 33 districts. Initiatives that either amended the Constitution or called for a CONCON needed signatures from 10% of the Montana voters and 40 legislative districts. Notice I mentioned something called a CONCON. For the past 50 years, most Montanans have viewed these requirements as justified and fair. I'd like to call the committee's attention specifically to the changes in HB 385. Initiatives that amend the Constitution must have signatures from 20% of Montana voters and qualify 60 legislative districts. If you compare that to the CONCON, which needs 10% of the Montana voters and 40 legislative districts, I think you soon see that you're making the initiative, the simple initiative, harder than calling a constitutional convention. Every 20 years, Montana voters are asked to consider calling a CONCON. The first election got only 18% of the vote, and the second got 41%, so they're coming around to this idea. I did a back-of-the-envelope calculation. The estimated convention cost, if we did call a CONCON, would total about $4 million, but there's an additional cost. Each of 100 delegates must stand for election in both a primary and a general special election, costing perhaps $2 million each. Then there's the election to ratify the new Constitution, bringing us to a total of about $10 million for a CONCON vote. For these reasons, I really do ask you to table HB 384.
Thank you. At this time, we'll go to opponents on Zoom. I show a couple. Okay, whenever you're ready.
I can hear me?
Yes.
Hi, Chair and members of the committee. My name is Lauren Caldwell. That's L-A-U-R-E-N. The last name is C-A-L-D-W-E-L-L. And I'm here on behalf of the Montana Federation of Public Employees and the public educators and public employee members we represent across Montana. I want to express our appreciation for the sponsors' work to clean up language in our Montana Constitution through C-46 and C-47 last election cycle. We thought those were good bills, good referendum, and we're glad they passed. I think the critical question for this bill, as some folks have brought up prior to me, is, and this is true of the next bill you're going to hear as well, is what is the right balance between protecting Montanans' constitutional right to bring their ideas directly to voters through ballot initiatives and ensuring that there's some threshold to qualify for the ballot so we don't see a preponderance of issues on the ballot like the dozens of issues that some other states have on their ballots every election cycle. The good news is that I think we've already achieved that balance in Montana. Every election cycle, as many of you know from visiting the Secretary of State's website during the election season, we see dozens of initiatives filed, but only a few meet the current thresholds to qualify to be on the ballot. So to ground that assertion in some specifics, in 2020, 15 ballot initiatives were filed, but only two qualified. Both of those initiatives passed. In 2018, 16 ballot initiatives were filed, but only two qualified again, and neither passed. I couldn't access the data prior to 2018 from the Secretary of State, but from my experience, I think those past two election cycles are fairly representative of the norm. So the bar seems like it's appropriately set in Montana. It's hard to qualify for the ballot. You have to show that there is interest among Montanans, but it's not so difficult that we never see initiatives qualify. Like I said, there's a barrier, but it's not onerous. And In the end, after an initiative qualifies, every single citizen of this state in every single district in Montana gets to have their say on whether or not that initiative should become law. So we have a really good system here. It's got good checks and balances in place, and it allows for ballot initiatives to still take place. Like our the folks before me said, this bill would upend that balance in Montana, and it would really make it an impossible barrier to qualify ballot initiatives. And I don't think any of us are seeking to do that. We urge you to vote no on House Bill 384.
Thank you. Is there a Ms. Steinmiller on Zoom?
Yes, Mr. Chair.
Okay, whenever you're ready.
Hello, Chairman Terry and the committee. Thank you for this opportunity. My name is Patricia Steinmuller, S-T-E-I-N-M-U-L-L-E-R, and I urge you to vote against HB 384 because, as others says, it paves the way for a constitutional amendment that would make it so onerous that it's nearly or almost assuredly impossible for citizens' initiative to gain enough signatures to be placed on the ballot. And this is these initiatives provide the only direct means for voters to pass legislation. We vote on legislators, but this is our opportunity, our only opportunity to directly pass legislation. As others have said, doubling the percent of qualified voters, it makes it too difficult, and also doubling the percentage of total qualified electors sets the bar too high to be achievable by citizens. Our Constitution guarantees this right to citizens, and it has never been abused. And you just heard the statistics on how it has been used and how it has been used correctly and to the benefit of the population. Since the current process works as intended, no change is needed. It's already extremely challenging to gain enough qualified signatures for a citizen initiative to be placed on the ballot. If enacted, this change would eliminate the voice of the public to develop and directly pass legislation of interest to Montana voters. This is our democracy in action. It's our direct way to obtain legislation. We ask you to protect our rights and protect our Constitution. Vote against HB 384. Thank you.
Thank you. Seeing no further opponents, are there questions from the committee? Senator Bennett.
Mr. Chair, for the sponsor.
Representative Gunderson.
Mr. Chair, Senator Bennett.
Mr. Chair and Representative Gunderson, I'll start off by saying that it was great working with you on the constitutional initiatives last time. Not as wild about these ones, I'll have to admit. I guess you said that this is what you want to do, but I didn't have any sense as to why. What's broken about the system that we have now?
Mr. Chair, Senator Bennett, I would return the question. What was wrong in 2001 when the voters changed from legislative districts to more onerous counties? That passed. The people voted on it. It went onto the ballot. People voted on it. And I think clearly the voters wanted to raise the bar. It's just that they did it the wrong way, and I believe you'd agree with that. Looking back, one of the reasons that I wanted to change it is that we had an initiative called I-186, and it would have virtually killed mining all across the state, and the only way that it could pass was to be brought by the initiative process, and the signatures required to get that on the ballot in let's say my district, I'll use District 1 as an example. They got 30 signatures, if I remember right, out of the whole county. So that's two legislative districts. We didn't have much of a voice again, there wasn't that many people that they brought from our county, but we still didn't have the voice that that I believe this change gives rural Montana, not just us, but all of rural Montana.
Thank you.
Seeing no further questions from the committee, sponsor, clear to close.
Mr. Chair, would you mind if I gave a handout?
That'd be fine.
Okay. There are actually two handouts, so I'll just... And the actual printout there that I gave, that the Secretary of State and I sat down and worked out a couple different bills. And CI 118 and I 190. And I don't believe that they got marked on which one's which, but it's an easy way to compare. As you see, using the numbers that I'm proposing, it wasn't a very large reach to still get those ballots issues onto the ballot. So it wasn't impossible. It's just dependent on how you put your dollars in, and the best bang for the buck, I guess, is probably the best way to put it.
Well, I didn't even look in.
And I'm one of the things that I heard is that you know, this isn't good for the voters because they it's ballot clutter and things like that. Well, I guess my only request would be put this in front of the voters and let them make the decision, not us, not the opponents. Let the public, the voting public, make that decision. It's an easy ask. And again, I would remind the committee that we did pass it completely through both bills that I'm bringing today through the House, unamended. And there's still some amendments that, you know, if you feel free to change whatever you want. But I believe that the changing one-third to three-fifths of the legislative representative districts gives us a much greater voice. Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Gunnison. This closes the hearing on House Bill 384. And before we open the hearing on House Bill 385, because they are so similar, the same opponents will be testifying. And what I would ask is that if you have something new to add that you didn't have on 384, please feel free to do that. But if you're pretty much feeling the same about both bills, I would appreciate it if you would just indicate that when you get to the microphone, state your name and say, I don't like this bill any more than I did the other one, because one of the opponents made it really clear that they don't think that we do much up here, but we actually do. We're pretty busy every day, and so we have other things to take care of. So with that, I will open the hearing on House Bill 385.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Again, for the record, Representative Gunderson, G-U-N-D-E-R-S-O-N, District 1. 385, or House Bill 385, is amending Article 14, Section 9 of the Montana Constitution, and using the same formulas, basically doubling the numbers from 10 to 20%, and from two-fifths, which would be 40 legislative districts, to three-fifths, which are 60 legislative districts. So that should even out the or give everybody a greater voice. One of the things that I would like to point out, Montana is a test tube for ideas from out of state, and I think I-190 is probably the best demonstration of that. Other than that, pretty much everything is the same timeline. This bill was also in that C-47, C-48, and it was also amended in 2001, put to the voters, and again went through the same process. Mr. Chair.
Thank you. At this time, are there any proponents to House Bill 385? Seeing none, are there any proponents on Zoom?
No, Mr. Chair.
Seeing none, we now will hear from all opponents to House Bill 385.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Katiana Stutzer, K-A-T-J-A-N-A, S-T-U-T-Z-E-R, here on behalf of the Montana Public Interest Research Group, MOPPERG. For the same reasons we've already talked about, we're also in opposition to House Bill 385, and I just wanted to reiterate that every citizen gets to weigh in on ballot initiatives via the ballot if they actually make it there with their vote. Thank you.
Thank you. Further opponents?
Hello, Stan Frazier again, F-R-A-S-I-E-R. Ditto on my previous comments. And both these bills look to me like a pattern of voter suppression. Making it harder to get initiatives, making it harder for people to vote. And I think they're undemocratic.
Thank you. Further opponents?
My name is Patrick Iwaki. That's spelled Y-A-W-A-K-I-E. As same reasons as before, we stand in opposition or representing the Blackfeet tribe today. Same stance as before. We totally do not support House Bill 385 as well. Just want to bring up how this past election, voters had the opportunity to vote on a certain initiative that would legalize marijuana in the state. Putting this further restrictions is just putting voters who put a lot of people in this committee in their seat is going to even just hurt your chances in the future of getting these seats again. Voters are paying attention, and they'll be reminded again in this next coming election about their representatives disregarding their right to vote. So thank you.
Thank you, brother. Further opponents?
Good afternoon, Chair and Committee. My name is Samuel Enemy Hunter. That is E-N-E-M-Y-H-U-N-T-E-R. And I'm here with Montana Native Vote. And we at Montana Native Vote are writing to express our opposition to House Bill 385, which would raise requirements of citizens to collect signatures to petitions for a constitutional amendment to be added to the ballot and therefore limit the ability of citizens to participate in electoral and lawmaking processes. While the incentive to make participation in the political process easier for rural folks is certainly a goal that we support at our organization, this bill will only make it harder for all Montanans to collect the signatures needed to propose constitutional amendments and make their voices heard in governmental processes. In a state as vast and remote as Montana, gathering initiatives from a specific percentage of voters already requires large amounts of time, dedication, and yes, money. Altering requirements for the percentage of voters and geographical range needed to submit a ballot initiative will only make political participation harder for the people this bill is attempting to support, as it will most hurt citizens who lack the funding, connections, and organization of established special interest groups. Thus, the rural communities this bill is attempting to aid will really only be hindered by it. Instead of throwing the process of ballot initiatives into the hands of hyper-partisan legislators, please vote no on HB 385 and return this power to the people who deserve a voice in political matters. Thank you.
Thank you. Further opponents in the room?
Chairman, members of the committee, Sam Forstag, F-O-R, S-T-A-G, ACLU of Montana. I'll keep it brief. We oppose this bill as well as its companion bill, 384, for the simple reason that it makes it more difficult for citizens to access direct democracy. These are reforms that were designed to ensure that folks could make their voice heard without going through the legislature, and it would hurt folks across the state and across the political spectrum. I urge a no vote.
Thank you. At this time, we'll go to the same two opponents on Zoom for this bill that there were for the last bill. Well, she. Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah, you're right.
I was hidden.
I can't see her. Please.
My name is Carol Mackin, and this time I'm speaking for my husband, Mark Mackin, who couldn't be here today. He likes to look around beyond.
Microphone down, please.
He likes to look around beyond Montana, and he found out that there were only three other states in the nation that had more difficult qualifications for changing their constitution by initiative. But with the change here, we're going to be number one. We'll be the hardest. If you look at how many constitutional initiatives we've had in the past 40 years, you would just kind of average it out. You'd say there's been one constitutional amendment passed every 10 years. So it's plenty hard to do these things. Rural Montanans might actually have a very difficult time meeting the qualifications that you're suggesting. Then they have items that sometimes need to be addressed by an initiative also, or a constitutional initiative. For instance, they might be concerned about family farms and how to transmit farms to the families in a fair way. Or they might worry about the small town survival in their areas and the mills that are there. So you're actually making it harder. By sort of making it harder for the urban folks, you're making it much harder for the rural folks too. Thank you.
Thank you.
Oh, I have a written testimony that I'd like to give you.
Of course, thank you. Okay, now at this time, we'll go to the same two opponents on Zoom whenever they're ready.
Mr. Chair, we have Patty Steinmuller.
Whenever you're ready.
Hello. Chairman Kerry and the committee, thank you. My name is Patricia Steinmuller, S-T-E-I-N-M-U-L-L-E-R. And like other opponents, this HB 385, I ask you to oppose this by voting against it. Since the current process works as intended, no change is needed. This is a direct opportunity for us as citizens to make a constitutional amendment that would be nearly essentially impossible for us to do with this legislation. So protect our rights, protect our constitution, and I ask you to vote against HB 385.
Thank you, Ms. Steinmiller. Now, Ms. Caldwell, are you still on? Okay, whenever you're ready.
Hi, Chair, members of the committee. Again, Lauren Caldwell, last name C-A-L-D-W-E-L-L, on behalf of the Montana Federation of Public Employees. My testimony here is similar to the last, so I'll keep it really short. Again, the question's about striking the right balance between protecting citizen access to the ballot while preventing an unwieldy number of ballot issues. And again, I'd argue that Montana has struck just that right balance. The difference between House Bill 384 and 385 is that it's already a much higher bar to qualify a constitutional initiative than a statutory initiative. And that's why we rarely see constitutional initiatives come before the ballot. In fact, we more often see constitutional referenda come to the ballot. But in just to, again, ground that in specifics, in 2018, no constitutional initiatives qualified for the ballot. In 2020, only one did, despite multiple being filed every year. So, again, the bar is high. It's working well. Rarely do we get constitutional initiatives, constitutional initiatives and under the current criteria. And so we urge you again to vote no.
Thank you. Questions from the committee? Senator Bennett.
Mr. Chair, for the sponsor.
Representative.
Mr. Chair, Senator Bennett.
Mr. Chair and Representative Gunderson, I think some of the opponents brought up an interesting point. I've been involved in ballot initiatives for a while now, and I know that the days of where, you know, a group of citizens could, you know, travel around the state and get enough signatures to get something on the ballot is right at the cusp right now. I mean, they can do it, but it's going to take a whole lot of volunteers and a whole lot of interest. I mean, if you increase this to the 20% or even the 10% in the previous bill, it feels like it's only going to be these well-funded organizations that can hire a fleet of signature gatherers that are going to be able to get things on the ballot. I mean, is that your intention, or how do you see that playing out?
Mr. Chair, Senator Bennett, I guess I would ask who was behind I-190? That's the type of thing that I think we need to to try to help protect Montanans from. And I think that's what both of these bills will do.
Senator Bennett? Okay, seeing no further questions, sponsor care to close.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And again, I just remind you, if the House passed this with no real issues, but I would, make the same comment that the ability to amend anything out that might be a bridge too far in your eyes. Again, I would really love to see the qualified electors change from 2/5 or 40 to 3/5, 60 in the legislative districts. Other than that, if you have questions on my spreadsheet, I'm available for questions as well.
Thank you, Representative Gunderson. That closes the hearing on House Bill 385. Chairman Kerry.
Thank you, Senator Vance. I appreciate your taking over there. Members, do you need a short break?
5 minutes.
5 minute break? Okay. We'll be in recess for 5 minutes until 4:05.
What was I, room 86? I can't remember.
I'm 186.
Members will come back into order, back into executive session.
Okay, Mr. Chairman, I move a due pass on House Bill 447.
447 is another bill by Representative Mercer related to oversight of administrative rules.
Ginger, how many amendments do we have for this one?
Just one, I think.
Well, the number on it's five, though.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, you should just have the one amendment, the 2.5.
2.5, thank you. Mr. Chairman, I also move a due pass on HB 447.2.5. Ginger, would you explain it to us, please?
Certainly, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. So under the bill, an agency had to send a preliminary proposal notice for administrative rules to the Rule Review Oversight Committee 30 days before they gave notice to the public at large, and that notice process happens through the bi-monthly Secretary of State's administrative register. So this amendment would eliminate that 30-day pre-notice provision for the committee, and it would replace it by requiring the agency to simply send the same notice it's sending for publication to the Secretary of State, to send that to the committee at the same time it sends it to the Secretary of State to prepare for publication. And that timeline is approximately, the Secretary of State requires approximately 10 days before the publication of the register for agencies to send them the notices to prepare them for publication. But the agencies can send them any time, you know, 11, 12, 30 days. They can send it any time before that 10 days. It's just a hard deadline on the 10 days, which is adopted every year in rule, but it's approximately 10 days. So this would just require that publication to be sent both to the committee and the Secretary of State at the same time. The other thing that this amendment does is, you'll see on page 9, it allows rules to be adopted between October 1st and the end of the year. If a rule is going to be adopted for the implementation of any program or policy, if the unavailability of information, guidance, or notice precluded adoption of the rule before October 1st, it widens that exception to any rules rather than just federal programs, policies, or guidance. So it could be any rules where there was unavailability of information that did not allow them to adopt it before that that window before October 1st. Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Ms. Aldridge. Questions on the amendment? Senator Ellis.
For Ms. Aldridge. Mr. Chair, Ms. Aldridge, the last part that you talked about, which allows amendments to be adopted after October 1st, I wondered, a lot of our legislation takes place October. If it doesn't have an effective date, it generally comes in, is adopted October 1st. So anything that has that, has no effective date and is adopted by the legislature, they could go ahead and do rules at that time when the legislation actually takes effect. Is that correct?
Mr. Chair and Senator Ellis, so if you'll turn to page 9 and look at the bill as it's written right now, if you look at line 11, this is specific to the year preceding the year in which the legislature meets. So the bills that you're passing now that you're talking about that will be effective in October, it's not going to affect those because it would be the year before the legislature meets. So it would be bills next year, and it would not affect the, you know, most of the bills that go into effect on October 1st in the year of a legislative session. Mr. Chair, I hope that answers your question, Senator Ellis.
Senator Ellis, did you need a follow-up?
No, I don't. That answers my question. Some of these bills I'm a little rusty on because we haven't heard them for a while, so yes. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Aldridge. Further questions?
Question.
Question has been called. We'll do a roll call vote.
This is on the amendment, right, Mr. Chair?
On the amendment.
Okay.
447.2.5.
Thank you.
Vice Chair Vance.
Yes.
Vice Chair Bennett.
Yes.
Senator Cuff.
Yes.
Senator Ellis.
Yes.
Senator Fox.
Yes.
Senator Osmundson.
Yes, by proxy.
Senator Sayles.
Yes.
Chairman Carey.
Yes.
8 vote yes and 0 vote no.
Mr. Contrarian, I mean Mr. Chairman, I'm sorry. I move a due pass on House Bill 447 as once amended.
Okay, 447 as amended. Discussion. Seeing no discussion, can we do a voice vote? All in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign?
No.
I have one no vote, Senator Ellis.
Senator Osmundson votes aye by proxy.
Mr. Chair, can I be a no?
Sure you can.
Thank you.
But not now. Yes, you can.
Did you check with Senator Fox just to make sure?
Senator Fox, how about you?
I'll be contrary.
You'll be contrary. Okay.
Three no's.
Yes.
Three no's. Any volunteers to carry 447? Well, I got the two other ones from Mercer. Might as well make it a three for...
Senator Osmundson would probably not mind carrying it.
Oh, yes. That's a... Hang on just a second here.
Because we're not doing the other one that he would be carrying today, so...
Yeah, we'll assign that to Senator Osmundson.
There you go.
He'll like us for that?
Of course.
Yeah.
You caught that too, huh? Yeah. Mr. Chairman, I move a due pass on House Bill 469. And Mr. Chairman, I don't see any amendments for this one, so.
Okay, 469 was by Representative Novak, and it was they wanted to allow funding or funds to be used for participation in Emergency Management Assistance Compact. In other words, they wanted the state of Montana to put up 50% when they got back to the state, and because they were, I guess they just wanted 50% down on the work they did. Now, it has come to light that there's about 20 units that participate in the emergency action, and from what I gather, and the little bit I have gathered, it shows that they are actually using the money to fund their departments, whether that's good, bad, or indifferent. So, discussion on House Bill
4. Well, Mr. Chairman, in light of that, I'll be a no.
Mr. Chairman, I think they're doing it as we, you know, it's going on now. I don't think we have to do action that authorizes it or throws money out at this point. Best of my knowledge, that fire departments are doing this now.
They're getting 50% paid by
the
state.
Well, they're being
when they
able
come back
to go out and service other states, help in other states.
Right, right. They have
that emergency. I'm not sure that there is.
Okay. Because in my checking, the FEMA payments come anywhere from 3 months to over a year after they get back.
Question.
Question has been called. We can do a roll call vote.
Vice Chair Vance.
No.
Vice Chair Bennett.
Yes.
Senator Cuff.
No.
Senator Ellis.
No.
Senator Fox.
Yes.
Senator Osmundson.
No, by proxy.
Senator Sayles.
No.
Chairman Carey.
No.
2 vote yes and 6 vote no.
Mr. Chairman, I move to table House Bill 469.
It's been moved to table House Bill 469. Can we go with just a voice vote? All in favor of tabling House Bill 469, please signify by saying yes.
Yes.
Yes. Yes.
Opposed, same sign.
Osmundson votes yes by proxy.
Thank you, committee members. 469 has been tabled.
Mr. Chairman, I move due pass on House Bill 506. House. And Mr. Chairman, I move due pass on HB 506.2.1 amendment.
Okay.
This is an amendment that I had Ms. Aldrich do because I just wanted to be crystal clear that while people can register early and get themselves ready to go when they meet residency requirements and they meet the age of voting, I don't want any ballots out there before that happens. So that's the purpose for the amendment. That's all there is to it. I think it's a good idea to let people do that without a doubt, but we have to wait until they actually qualify in order for them to get the ballot.
Discussion, Senator Ellis.
And Mr. Chairman, I'm sorry, I don't have this bill up, but this is the one that if kids are 18, they can't get a ballot, right?
If they will turn 18 by the time of the election, and if they meet the residency requirements by the time of the election, they can register early. It's just they have to wait until they meet the requirements.
Okay. Before getting a ballot.
Right. Yeah.
Mr. Yeah. Chairman, I wanted to talk on the amendment. Is that appropriate?
Please speak to it. Yes.
Okay. Mr. Chairman, I oppose this amendment, and this is why. I had a kid that turned 18 on election day, and there's a couple problems with this. They're nervous as all get out that something could go wrong, and they have to register. I mean, they can register early, but what if they can't get their ballot, or what if something comes up? Just to have the ballot ahead of time, it's not hurting anything. I know. We had a birth certificate because he played Legion ball, and we could prove that he was 18, and I just don't understand why we wouldn't allow that system to work. There's requirements. People look at this stuff. And in addition, the problem I have with this particular amendment is not only would it affected my kid, and he's over 18 now, but there's a lot of parents that don't help their kids do this stuff. And this prevents kids that are 18, and my kid was in high school at the time, but if they're going to be away for some reason during the election, they basically couldn't vote. They'd be prohibited from voting because they can't do the mail-in part, you know, request that ahead of time. They'd only get the ballot the day of the election. And I just think it puts up barriers to prevent young kids that we want to get voting right out of the gate that we just don't need to do. Speaking as a mom.
Speaking as a dad, that gives one ballot out there that can go astray. I don't know how your kids were when they were teenagers, but sometimes mine had a lack of, how do I put it, politically correct. They had a hard time keeping track of things sometimes. So you would have a ballot out there that maybe is not going to get voted, and then that individual will have to come back down and explain why. And I think by doing it the way the amendment is, there's not a chance of losing it. They have a chance of getting everything in line as how they will vote, even with a mock-up ballot from the Secretary of State's office, and just go in and vote. I think voting in person the first time, and I go way back, but that means a lot to go into a poll and vote the first time. That's my personal fit. Senator Bennett.
Mr. Chair, I'm going to be opposed to the amendment, and I think I think there's just some misunderstandings about how this process works, because there's a lot of technology that our clerks have. I mean, the reason they have those barcodes on the envelope is because they know who it is, what's delivering a ballot when it arrives. And information about somebody that's not 18 yet is something that pops up when they scan it. So, I mean, my concern is that, you know, if you're somebody that lives 100, 200 miles away from the county seat and your birthday is a day or two before Election Day or on Election Day, as it was for Sarah Ellis's kid, I mean, you're going to not have time to have your ballot mailed to you. So you're going to have to drive hundreds of miles in to get in to get your ballot, I mean, which I think is a problem unto itself. When this really could just be resolved, and as it is being resolved right now by the fact that we have these scanners. So somebody gets their ballot, they return it, they're going to turn 18 on the day before, that gets put in a separate tray. And those sit there in their envelopes, in their outer envelopes. It's not made anonymous by putting it just in the secrecy envelope or even taken out of the secrecy envelope to be counted. I mean, that doesn't even happen until one day before Election Day. So these are all just sitting aside, and they get scanned periodically. And when it's time, when they turn 18, those ballots get taken out of their signature envelope. They get put over with the secrecy envelopes with everyone else, because at that point they're allowed to cast their ballot. So we have precautions in there already that are making sure that these ballots are not being put in with the rest of the ballots, they're not being counted with the rest of the ballots. When it comes time, when they turn 18, their ballot is put in with the rest of the ballots. So that's already taken care of. The only thing that this amendment does is makes it so that their ballot doesn't get sent to them. And when everybody else is getting their ballot at the same time, I just don't see any reason why they wouldn't just get their ballot with everyone else. And we could just let the technology that exists right now that our clerks are using, you know, make sure that those folks aren't casting a ballot any earlier than they're eligible to.
Further comments?
Mr. Chairman, I believe it's a very good motion amendment, and I'll be a yes vote.
Question.
Question has been called on amendment HB 506.2.1. Roll call vote.
Vice Chair Vance.
Yes.
Vice Chair Bennett.
No.
Senator Cuff.
Yes.
Senator Ellis.
No.
Senator Fox.
No.
Senator Osmundson.
Yes, by proxy.
Senator Sayles.
Yes.
Chairman Carey.
Yes.
5 vote yes and 3 vote no.
Mr. Chairman, I move a due pass on House Bill 506 as once amended.
Mr. Chairman, substitute motion to table.
Been motion to table. It's non-debatable. Do a roll call vote.
Vice Chair Vance.
No.
Vice Chair Bennett.
Yes.
Senator Cuff.
No.
Senator Ellis.
Yes.
Senator Fox.
Yes.
Senator Osmundson.
No, by proxy.
Senator Sayles.
No.
Chairman Carey.
No.
3 vote yes and 5 vote no.
Back to discussion on House Bill 506.
As once amended.
As, yeah.
Mr. Chairman, I would like to make one more comment.
Senator Ellis.
My child has voted in every election, and part of that is because he could vote in the first election. And I don't think we should put hurdles up to get kids in that habit. I just don't think that we should do that. So he keeps track, and his mom keeps track and makes sure she pings him if he's not. And so he has voted in school board elections and everything. He's really diligent, and he's 26 now, and that's really good. So I just think that as the good senator from Missoula has indicated, we have a process in place. This isn't like it's debatable whether they're 18 or not. That is already known. Why not let them have the ballot when everybody else does? I also think this adds a burden to clerks and recorders to mail out little things. Well, they probably wouldn't. They just have a list somewhere, because this is, I think, the last week, if I remember it correctly. And, yeah, I will be quiet now.
Senator Ellis, if it stayed true to the law, though, he would not be able to, he or she would not be able to vote that, even if they were given that ballot, until the day of election. If it was your son, he would not be able to vote it until the day of election, and then he'd have to mail it. The law says you must be 18 to vote. So his birthday, if it's on election day, is the day he would vote.
Mr. Chairman, I'm proud of Senator Ellis's son, and I appreciate that. I also think that part of growing up is learning there are rules. Sometimes they're tough rules, but you learn to follow the rules. That somebody is not always going to be lean over to help you find a way around a rule. And as Senator Kerry says, the law is you cannot vote until you're 18. As Senator Vance says, you shouldn't get a ballot out there before you're 18, because who knows who else might grab that and vote it. So I'm still in favor of this motion.
Call for the question.
Question has been called. We'll do a roll call vote.
This is on 506 as once amended, right?
Amended, okay. Yes.
Vice Chair Vance.
Yes.
Vice Chair Bennett.
No.
Senator Cuff.
Yes.
Senator Ellis.
No.
Senator Fox.
No.
Senator Osmundson.
Yes, by proxy.
Senator Sayles.
Yes.
Chairman Kerry.
Yes.
And 5 vote yes and 3 vote no.
And I believe Representative Fielder had asked that Senator Vance carry that one.
Oh, well, he didn't, but okay.
Okay,
Mr. Chairman, I move a due pass on House Bill 530.
Okay, House Bill 530 by Representative McCamey requires the Secretary of State to adopt rules governing election security.
Senator Bennett, you apparently have 2 amendments. You going to move both of them, or what are you?
Mr. Chair, I'll just move one of them, and I'll move Amendment HB 530.1.2.
.2, not 1, right?
.2, okay. Yeah.
Ginger, do you want to explain it, or Bryce, can you explain it?
I'll give a general overview. So we talked in committee about the ability for those of us in the legislative branch to have some oversight when it comes to the election integrity that the Secretary of State, as well as the National Guard and other people, are assisting in to make sure that we are able to be kind of looped into that so that we can get some live access to it. And I kind of asked Ginger to put together ideas that were sort of formed around some of the federal intelligence committees where people have the ability to get, you know, some of this confidential, you know, highly regulated information, but in a way that's very, very confidential and held tightly so that we have the information that will help us make decisions and that oversight responsibility, but certainly in a way that would never be open to the public because, you know, we don't want the hackers or the people trying to get into our election infrastructure to know what we're up to. But I do think it's still important for us to know so that we can exercise our legislative oversight. So that's what the amendment does. And certainly if Ms. Aldridge wants to touch on that, I'm happy to have her talk on it as well.
Do you have anything to add, Ms. Aldridge, on that?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, unless there are questions, I think that covers it.
Discussion on the amendment. I do have a question. Is security assessments defined anywhere? I mean, what are security assessments?
Mr. Chair, I don't know if that is, and I would defer to Ms. Aldridge on that specific language.
Ms. Aldridge, do you know if security assessments is described anywhere?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I can look where it's being codified, but since this is a new section, I would assume that it is not. However, it is talked about in subsection 1B, where it says the Secretary of State and County Election Administrators shall annually assess their compliance with the election security rules established in accordance with subsection 1A. So presumably the Secretary of State would use that rulemaking in subsection 1A and would probably determine what would be in the security assessment. So that 1B goes on to say, county election administrators shall provide the results of the assessments to the Secretary of State in January of each year. And then it goes on to say that they're confidential information. So I would expect that the Secretary of State in their rulemaking would provide what would be in a security assessment that has to be provided to the Secretary of State each year.
So then, Ginger, you think it's in rule, it's not in code. Would that be?
Yes, Mr. Chair and Senator Vance, I think that with the rulemaking power being provided to the Secretary of State in this new section, that the Secretary of State would determine what would be in the security assessments. Okay.
Thank you. Further questions on the amendment?
Question.
Question has been called. Roll call. Voice. We can do a voice vote. All in favor of amendment 530.1.2, please signify by saying aye.
Aye. Senator Osmundson votes aye on the amendment by proxy.
Any in opposition? Unanimous.
Mr. Chair, I move a due pass on House Bill 530 as once amended. And you're not going to move the other one, correct, Senator Bennett? Okay.
Discussion on the bill. Seeing no discussion, just a voice vote.
Nope.
Okay. Roll call vote.
Vice Chair Vance.
No.
Vice Chair Bennett.
Yes.
Senator Cuff.
No.
Senator Ellis.
Yes.
Senator Fox.
Yes.
Senator Osmundson.
No, by proxy.
Senator Sayles.
No.
Chairman Carey.
Yes.
Four vote yes and four vote no.
The bill stays in the jacket because you can't table it either. So,
we'll put that back into their folder.
Now I have a question for you. Were we going to do this today? I thought this was one that they were still.
Yeah, that's
figured,
a whole.
We're right. Still working on it. Okay, so that was the last one then. Okay.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Ellis.
I just have a request. When we get amendments, I know Ginger, Ms. Aldridge does get them out to us, but since there's been a big break between when we've heard a bill, when we get amendments, it just would be helpful to know ahead of time, maybe, so we could look at stuff and be a little more prepared what we're going to do. And that's just my request because I like reading stuff and I try to do that.
Ms. So. Aldridge, is there a place that can find the I know the amendments are coming fast and furious right now, but normally is there a place to find the amendments? Generally, I look at the bill page and it would show amendment.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, as soon as the bill, when the amendments are in edit, the editors publish them to the web. So if you go to the bill, you'll see all the amendments that are ready. You'll see them as soon as, you'll see them sooner than they get passed back to the drafter. So the best place to go to look at the amendments is just go to the bill page on laws and go to the amendments page, and you'll see all the amendments up to the moment that you're looking that are ready and to go.
Yeah, and Mr. Chairman.
Yes.
Mr. Chairman, it would just be helpful to know maybe what we're doing executive action on a little bit, because I can find the amendments, and if nothing else, I can search for Ms. Aldridge on my email. That's what I end up doing because my email is so overwhelming right now. But knowing a little bit ahead of time, I just would be more prepared for these discussions.
Okay, I will attempt to send out an email because we will be taking executive action on a lot of, you know, any Senate bills that are in there, anything that has an amendment on it,
I would like to take executive action on that on Monday if the amendments are ready, because they need to be across the floor into the other house by Friday.
So, Mr. Chairman, if I could ask, it looks, from just the listening to the discussion, it looks like House Bill 588 is going to get an amendment, or is that what I'm hearing?
There's an amendment from the sponsor, and I believe there's an amendment from Osmondson also, and there's a technical amendment.
Okay, so are those posted? Are all three posted yet? I don't even know the answer to that. How about, I don't know. I just want to be able to look at stuff ahead of time, that's all.
And
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, the sponsor's amendment is posted and the technical amendment is posted. I don't have a request from Senator Osmondson yet. I don't know if he has asked a different drafter to do one.
He had told me this morning that he was working on an amendment on that one. And then the other one is 618, established public records retentions, and there is an amendment on that by Representative McCamey.
Okay, thank you. So
that, you know as much as I do.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Bennett.
Mr. Chair, I would move to table House Bill 385.
85.
It's what we heard today.
I'm sorry, I couldn't understand.
Mr. Chair, I moved to table House Bill 385. This is the bill by Gunderson that we heard today, one of the two that we heard by Gunderson today.
Oh, okay. I was looking through the pile, and it's like, no, there isn't one here.
Today's pile.
I got you.
Okay, and we are in executive session, so House Bill 385 has been moved to be tabled. Non-debatable.
Non-debatable. Wow.
Whenever you're ready.
Vice Chair Vance.
Yes.
Vice Chair Bennett.
Yes.
Senator Cuff.
No.
Senator Ellis.
Yes.
Senator Fox.
Yes.
Senator Osmondson.
No, by proxy.
Senator Sayles.
Yes.
Chairman Carey.
No.
5 vote yes and 3 vote no.
And Mr. Chair, I'm going to make the motion on the next one, but I know that Senator Cuff wanted to say something.
Senator Cuff, did you have a comment?
I did. And I would have liked to have said it before we took the vote, but part of what I see this is, the legislature is where we should be vetting and having time to look at things, and not what so seems to me to happen often. The easier it is to throw it on a ballot, the more things are going to get thrown on the ballot. And when they get thrown on the ballot, the vetting process goes out the window. And the understanding of what's in that issue frequently is not understood by everybody involved. I mean, we're seeing that on how we're trying to sort out the marijuana bill right now. And it often is the person with the most money for advertisements or the catchiest ads, the best advertising agency, and those things get shoved into law without a very good vetting process. And I think what the sponsor, what I saw him trying to do is saying, hey, if it is a little bit harder to get it on the ballot, that's okay. So that's why I would have voted to pass both of these issues. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
And Mr. Chair, I will just say that I think that there's a lot of valid discussion here. The conversation that we had is just the practicality of this needs 34 votes in the Senate, and I'll be honest in saying that I don't think that those votes exist, and we've got a very big agenda ahead of us on the floor. So I know that there's a philosophical difference here, but this is just a practical piece. So I would move to table House Bill 384.
House Bill 384 has been moved to table, non-debatable.
do a roll call vote.
Vice Chair Vance.
Yes.
Vice Chair Bennett.
Yes.
Senator Cuff.
The table.
To table. I will vote no.
Senator Ellis.
Yes.
Senator Fox.
Yes.
Senator Osmundson.
No, proxy.
Senator Sayles.
Yes.
Chairman Carey.
No.
5 vote yes and 3 vote no.
Senate Bill 384 has been tabled. So put, keep 384 and 385
packet just in case. Packet.
Just in case.
Stranger things have happened.
So.
Okay.
Can you remind all of us who's got what and carrying to the floor, please?
Yeah.
Yeah, I've got 429, I know, and 406.
Right at the top. Okay, so for House Bill 277.
Bryce.
Yes, Senator Bennett will carry. And House Bill 406, Senator Carey. House Bill 429, Senator Carey. Let's see. What happened? Okay, and then let me scroll
506.
Down. House Bill 506, Senator Vance.
530 was tabled, correct?
Correct. And, yep, that was it. 385 and 384 were also tabled. So that was all I have.
And 447, Osmundson.
Oh, thank you.
Yes, Osmundson.
Yep. He was making fun of Ellsworth today when Ellsworth was complaining about what I did to him in business and labor, so he deserves what he gets.
Members, if there is nothing else, we will adjourn for today. Monday, we do have a full schedule again, as well as Wednesday. And we'll try to do, if we get out of session early, we'll try to take care of some of that stuff on Monday. And again, on Wednesday, if we get out a little bit early, same thing. But I appreciate your cooperation and your work ethic on this. Thank you very much. With that,
Mr. Chair.
Yes, Ms. Aldridge.
May I ask, I heard you mention the amendment on 618, and that one should be ready, and you guys should all have that. So I just wanted to check and make sure that the members already had that amendment.
On 618? I have to look.
Yeah, if there's only one.
Mr. Chairman,
Ms.
Aldridge, is there only one on that, 618?
Correct, just the 1.1.
I've got it.
It's a gray bill. Oh. Okay, well. Ms. Aldridge, could you email Senator Bennett the gray bill on 618?
Sure will.
Thank you. Anything else for the good of the order?
Nope.
We are now adjourned.
Thank you.